Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Options Discovery. Today, I'm sitting down with Matt Amberson, the principal and founder of ORATS. Matt, can you give us a little overview of your background and how you got to where you are today?
Sure. Nice to meet you, Asma. I actually came to Chicago from California. I was playing volleyball and went to graduate school there, showed up, it looked like a nuclear bomb went off. Californians are not used to that. And I got a specialty in finance and went to the floor of the CBO and started a market making career there that has continued on until this day, so over 20 years.
And how did your experience as a market maker at CBO, I guess, assist you in starting your own company?
Yeah, so we realized quickly that, you needed more of an edge than just the bid-ask spread. So I would hire people and put them on badges and have them learn the business and then start to create proprietary calculations that we could use to help us trade. And so we did that and we were successful. We had 14 people across the floor. And people were asking about our forecasts and all that. And then I figured I got married and we were looking for kids. And so I said, it's a little bit too stressful to be trading and backing all these people. So we started ORATS and we used a lot of that proprietary data to get started. So we had a boost there with our market making data and people working for us.
I want to ask you, I guess, a few more questions about ORATS. Can you give an overview of what ORATS is?
Sure. As I mentioned, it started with these forecasts and proprietary indicators that we were calculating to aid our market making operation. And then, we started to get clients and they would say, well, how do we know that your forecasts and calculations are good? And so we said, well, here are some regression analysis, but we also made a back tester. And so that back tester kind of got a life of its own. And, we had large firms at that point, but then, other people started to see it. We, put our ORATS online and we'd have people coming in wanting to back test. It's very difficult to back test options, but we had a good team of programmers that really understood how options worked. And we tried to get as realistic as possible so that, a lot of these people had, the programmers had been on the floor, so they knew how to make it realistic. And so, that was kind of our bailiwick is having market maker adjacent people programming for us to make our back testing and our data very useful for trading and also very accurate and realistic.
And I know ORATS was founded in 2001. How would you say the platform has evolved over the years?
Yeah, so back then it was just data. And then we got the back tester and then people wanted more. So they wanted to say, okay, I have a good back test. How do I implement that? So then we put together option scanners and got faster and faster data. One of the really cool things that we do is summarize the entire surface and do forecasts of all parts of the surface. So that's really important in implied volatility and options trading. So we had these forecasts that you could sort on and find the best option trade and use back test to do it. And so that's really what we're about is really bringing as much research to bear as possible and then helping people execute. And then risk management was huge in options trading for market makers. So we had that. And then we also had some journaling that we've done. We used to be the last people to leave at night because the market makers, we'd sit down and we'd go over all the trades and see what the deltas were at each point and what the trading edge was and all that. So that's kind of a journaling exercise. And that's what we've tried to bring all that information, more to just a normal trader, off-floor traders, retail traders, institutional traders.
So I know you're talking about back testing and stock scanning. What are some of the other services that ORATS provides and how can they help traders?
Yeah, I mean, and in order to really get, you could have scanners, you could have back testing, but you really need this extra data what I call the blocking and tackling and the fundamentals. Like, so we have, We have a very good dividend feed. As a matter of fact, we sell our dividends out to exchanges and large funds. So that feeds in. We have very good earnings dates. We have, you know, we must have 10 different feeds that come in from, you know, components of all of the ETFs. So we do some really cool stuff with calculating the component weighted averages for everything that we calculate, over 200 different variables for each stock. We also do that for the components of the ETF. So like if you were looking at Apple, you would have 200 things to look at, and then you would look at the XLK, which is the best ETF, which we identify for Apple. And then we would show you not just the calculations for XLK, but all the component weighted averages for all of the data there. So you'd so when you're looking at Apple, you're comparing it to its ETF and what that ratio has been. You're comparing it to its components. And now we're starting to do a lot of machine learning. And so we're finding out a lot of those data points are very important for predictiveness, both of not only implied volatility, but some stock direction, and also for our back test, when to put that on, when to take it off.
And I guess with all these services that is provided, how can ORETs be tailored to different traders, for example, newer traders, all the way to market experts or hedge funds?
Well, that's a real challenge, right? So you have people that get it, and you have people that don't get it. And so what you try to do is you try to say, okay, well, here's a quick start, and just know that a lot of this data is important. And, you know, by and large, even the people that don't know options like the back of people's hands, like I do, and a lot of the people that have trained with me, they still get, you know, the importance of backtesting and what all those numbers mean and what Sharpe ratios are all about, and at least some of that. So if we could communicate our data in those terms, then you can start, then you could get them up and familiar and confident to trade, confident to find their edge, you know, define their risk tolerances. And then we could, you know, set up information around those risk tolerances to help them get in, you know, and it's all kind of built on backtesting, because backtesting could really show how a strategy moves with the market and what the risks are and drawdowns and win rates and all that. So what are you comfortable with? And then, you know, so then you get someone that maybe doesn't have the experience, but you get them up and comfortable with a position, and they could be talking very eloquently about a strategy after not too long by looking at the back test.
Interesting. And I have another question. How does ORETs implement technical analysis in its platform?
Yeah, so we found that technical analysis is an important thing to look at, not just technical analysis of the underlying stock, which most people assume, but we do technical analysis of implied volatilities, and not just implied volatilities, but of implied volatilities at different delta ranges that are appropriate for, you know, particular back tests. So in our back test, we actually have a number of technical indicators that will establish what the environment is that we're currently in, defining it by those technical indicators like RSI, relative strength index, by simple moving averages, is it above or below the 50-day, 200-day, the IV percentile, the implied volatility, where it is vis-a-vis where implied volatility has been historically. And we'll say, okay, this is the environment that we're in right now, and we'll only do back tests that match that environment. So you could see, oh, okay, this is the environment that we're in. This is the technical indicators that define the environment. We'll go back and only trade this particular strategy, short put spread. And is this a good time to trade it or not? So we do use technical analysis quite a bit.
And I guess with all the information that's out there, how does ORETs ensure that the data and services available to traders is accurate?
Yeah, so that's, I mean, you're right. There's just a ton of data, and it's grown so much since when we started. It's mind-boggling. The cool thing is, you know, we used to have an office of, you know, 100 computers, and we'd have fans and air conditioning, and we'd look in on it at night, and we'd see what the temperature was. Oh my God, it brings me back. But now we have, Now we have cloud services, and we have different places in the cloud that we in different clouds providers. And so, and we have, heartbeats of, is everything working as it should? And so now we could, instead of worrying about, is it too hot in our office, we could worry about, are all the data right? And, now with computing, it really is incredible, like where we've come. And so we, you could check with much better granularity. You can make sure everything's working correctly. And, of course, we do that all the time. And we have, very discerning clients that will let us know if anything's wrong very quickly.
Well, it was very interesting to hear a little bit more about ORATS and how far it's come over the years. I kind of want to pivot our conversation a little bit here just to talk more about understanding market movements and how options traders can establish trades based on these market movements. The first question I have is, what market indicators or patterns are most crucial to understand when considering an options trade?
Yeah, so as I talked about before, that environment that you look at, you really need to look at, what is the stock doing? We have very accurate historical volatilities, even down to the one day. So we use, special types of calculations so we could tell if it's getting more volatile in a particular stock. And if that is, then it's not a good time to perhaps do a strategy that benefits from the stock not moving. So you really have to look at not just implied volatility levels, but you have to look at how the actual statistical underlying volatility is trending and where that's going. And again, we do forecasts and all that. So obviously volatility is really important, and it's really important to understand some of the technical indicators that we talked about before. And we make our own trend lines. Like we found that's important. If it's breaking out of a trend, it's going to be more volatile. As earnings comes up, that's more volatile events. As Fed speakers, as we've seen, that's more volatile. So you really have to be able to identify what the environment is, what are the risks, what is going to happen in the short term in order to profit in your option trading.
And I know you were just mentioning earnings. So what are some ways an investor, I guess, can trade these options around major market events or announcements?
Yeah, so earnings definitely a huge thing. And we've been focused on that since back on the market, on the market making days. I remember, I was trading on 30 stocks or something, and they'd come in and they'd just be buying all the stock that never trades. And then all of a sudden there's an earnings event and it goes crazy and you lose a bunch of money. And so ever since then, we've tried to forecast earnings, and especially when there's unusual volume around earnings, we have that type of information. But we really look to forecast the forecast implied earnings effect and the forecast earnings effect. So we want to see how much earnings is going to move vis-a-vis our forecast. And so one of the things that our users use to trade is that they'll sort a whole list of there's so many firms that are on a particular day, but if you sort them out and you put the high expected moves against the low expected moves, you can start to get people think trading earnings is a crapshoot, but if you're able to sort them and get the numbers behind you, then you could start getting the benefit of the historical information that we have. I mean, it's very difficult. I mean, you have to in order to really look at what the market is expecting as an earnings move, you get a straddle and people stop there, but you can't. You have to see how many days left are in the straddle, how much the stock is probably going to move. So we have all these distributions from a lot of historical moves in the past. And then you have what the volatility is going to fall to. So you have to price the residual straddle after buying a straddle. And then that gives you a very accurate indication of what the market thinks the stock is going to move around earnings. So you have to start with that and then look at a lot of history, look at that comparison, and then you can start putting the odds in your favor as well.
Let's talk a little bit more about bullish market movements. How can investors establish options trades to capitalize on upwards price trends?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, we've had a big rip in the market right now, which has actually been a little bit tough because often, often historically, when the market goes up, the volatility kind of comes down, and you could do these selling option strategies, and you know you're fine, like short put spread, or people do short puts, which I don't usually recommend. But in this type of environment, it's been very challenging, because if you had a short put spread on, you'd be, you know, stopped out, or it would go way through your strike and it expire, because we've had so much volatility straight up, straight down lately. So, you know, in bullish markets, you know, recently, you know, you have to be very nimble. It's not just, you know, sell a put spread and go home. Buying calls, it's very difficult because the volatility was high. It's come down quite a bit lately. And so, you know, we're getting into more nuanced position, a little bit more difficult to understand, but you have to put on these positions that make sense for the market and your risk tolerances. You know, there's a calendar. So a calendar means you buy a back month. So, you know, right now we're in December. So maybe you'd buy, you know, a February and you sell a late December option. And then if it's slightly out of the money, what you want the stock then to do is you want the stock to move up to that short strike that's a little bit higher than the market. So that's been a nice bullish strategy. And we have, you know, millions of back tests that we've run on these types of things. There's also a butterfly strategy. A butterfly, when you put on a butterfly, you want the stock to go right to the middle of the butterfly. So if you put that in slightly of a bullish situation, then you have, you know, then you have something that doesn't cost as much, not as risky as just a straight long call or something, not as risky as a short put. Those types of strategies have been used effectively recently, you know, with the strange movement that we've had in the market.
So on the other hand, you know, how about bearish markets? What are some option strategies that traders can use maybe to protect their portfolio or even profit potentially on these downward price trends?
Yeah, and again, you have to consider the environment that we're in too, and you know, how the market's going to move. Because again, you know, many people, you know, I'm a little older, but have only seen this kind of grinding up situation. And then when the market corrects, like in 2020 around COVID, it goes down violently. Now, I'm kind of the belief that we're not going to go like that. When we go down, we're going to go down in a much more contained way. And I could explain some reasons for that. But, you know, in that type of a case, you know, the backtesting is a little bit more difficult, because then you have to backtest in those types of environments when you're not just getting, you know, a very fast move to the downside, where you might have a protracted move to the downside. And again, we talked about calendar spreads, but we talked about them in a bullish fashion. If you use them as a bearish fashion, you put them underneath the market. So if the market's trading 450, you might put them at 400. And then when the market comes down to that level, those really profit quite a bit. And you don't have the risk of buying just straight puts in order to protect your position. So you really have to know what's going on out there. And I'll just expand a little bit on why I think that we're not going to get the desperate moves to the downside that we've seen before. And I think it's because of this zero DTE. So there's a huge movement in the industry to trade, you know, where traders are coming more for the SPX index, now NDX, zero DTE trades. And I think, you know, people were coming out, you know, wringing their hands, thinking that it was going to cause all these problems. And I said, no, this is going to be great. It's going to be great for market makers, because market makers, you know, as a market maker, you get into these systematic positions where your short puts, your long calls, everyone wants to sell call covered calls to you, so your long calls, and everyone wants to buy puts for protections, including banks. So you're kind of systematically short puts. So when the market starts to go down, the market makers are selling against their book. And so that actually exacerbates the movement to the downside. Now that's the way it used to be. Now with zero DTEs, there's so much more liquidity in the front, you know, in 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, that market makers are kind of able to get out of these really risky positions. And I think it's really dampened volatility and been better for, you know, kind of stability in the market. So, you know, that's kind of why I think that, you know, the put calendar, the market could still go up and down, but maybe not as violently as it did before, because the market makers had such risky systematic positions on. And I think zero DTEs actually help that.
I'm glad you brought up zero DTE. I think I actually recently did an episode on that. But I want to talk a little bit more about the Greeks. Can you explain how the Greeks would react to sudden upward movements in the market?
Yeah, so, you know, Greeks, when you talk about Greeks, the most important one is delta. So delta means how much your positions are going to change if the market goes up. And then gamma is how much the delta will move. So if you have gamma and the market's going up and the gamma's in the right spot, then you're going to be, you know, your deltas are going to affect you a lot more. So that's what kind of gamma means. And vega is the volatility. And that's how much your position is going to change if the volatility goes up one or down one. And then theta is what everyone tries to get by selling options. And that's how much you make every day by the options getting closer to expiration and decaying. So there's secondary ones that Greeks that we don't need to get into. But now you ask, so those are the Greeks. Now you ask, well, in a bullish environment. So typically in a bullish environment, volatility will tend to come down when the market goes up. So if you're long volatility, then that hurts you. If you're short volatility, it helps you. Gamma and and again, it depends where your long or short options are. Typically, let's just say if you're short a put spread underneath the market, you have less gamma and everything helps you when the volatility comes down if you're short. Now, if you have some of the other positions that I have talked about earlier, it's a little bit more nuanced, but typically that's what happens is when the market goes up, generally, the volatility comes down, and generally, it's good for option sellers in that type of an environment.
And on the other hand, how would downward trends affect the Greeks?
Somewhat oppositely, and again, not as much as since zero DTEs have been introduced, but generally what happens is people will be very scared about the market going down, and when they're scared, they buy options. When they buy options, the implied volatilities go up, so the vega goes up quite a bit. Generally, gamma flattens, meaning with extra volatility, it's not as pronounced. But and the deltas, if you don't want to be short these puts. If you're short these puts, then you start getting shorter and shorter as the market goes down. You have to sell, and that exacerbates the problem. That's the problem I was talking about a little bit earlier that market makers had. So yeah, generally those are the big differences between the market going up and the market going down. Just the volatility going way up when the market goes down and contracting when it goes up.
So I know we've been talking a little bit about trends. So how do investors differentiate between short-term fluctuations versus long-term trends in the market for options trading?
Yeah, that's a good question. We're doing machine learning, we're doing a lot of testing, and we always have. And you want to try to get away from just the noise of a day going up or an hour going up or whatever, and try to establish a trend so to get that you could understand, so you could then get into positions that you can use to benefit from those particular trends. So, I know a lot of services will say, hey, 45 days is good because you can kind of understand what's going on. And in that time frame, you could capture, you have enough time. So these momentary blips aren't going to bring you out of your position or whatnot. So, some people look at positions like 45 days and say, okay, 30 days, 45 days, that's where I want to trade. Well, other people will say, well, wait a second. I'm looking at zero DTEs, hours make sense. So, it does very much depend on the data that you have. So over at, we used to have near end of day data, and we still have it, but that was our big product. And we'd go back to 2007. Now we have minute by minute data, and we show that changing every second. So people can now kind of get the same look that they had with very long-term data, but now really compressed. So, if it's something fractal like that, where you can, take, the similarities from a very long-term view of it to a very short-term view of it, well, you could then adapt your positions to a much shorter time frame. So it really depends on the data and the granularity of how many looks that you get at it. And that comes from how often you're taking snapshots of the market and doing summarizations of it. So it really depends, I guess, Asma.
And just to piggyback off of my earlier question, what strategies would a trader implement based on short-term trends versus long-term trends?
Yeah, so these short-term trends, I mean, zero DTEs, let's just take that for a moment. So, again, there's a lot of, people think it's gambling. It's not. I mean, a lot of people are really looking at that minute-by-minute data, breaking it down, not only what's going on from a technical indicator standpoint that we talked about at the top of the show, what's going on with the implied volatilities in the stock prices, but, what's going on with the relative implied volatilities of the couple days out versus the zero DTE. So they're looking at those ratios and the trades that are going on. There are a lot of verticals. You don't want to be naked options, and you don't want to be naked options, especially in the most popular symbols like SPX, because it'll cost you a ton of money and it's very risky. So they're often doing verticals. And, some of the favorite, if you do a vertical like $5 wide and you get into it for $2, it could go to $5. And so it's not too much risk. But you could still, make some money on that. So people will look to those types of strategies. Longer term strategies, I mean, if you get really long term, that's leaps. And a lot of people will just, tend to buy a leap for stock replacement. What that means is instead of buying the stock for $400, you could buy a leap option for $5, and that's, both of those are times 100 to get the 100 shares of control. So leaps will allow you to from a long-term perspective, replace some of the stock for a lot. Some of these stocks have gone to such high prices that it's difficult to afford in a lot of people's portfolio, so they'll use these longer term. And then, just in a longer term meaning, maybe 45 days to 90 days for an option, those are still like, you could just do wider verticals and wider iron condors than you would be able to in a very short term perspective, where there isn't that much premium outside of the, near the money. So I don't know if that makes sense to people, but that's how you generally differentiate between longer term and shorter term option strategies.
So I want to talk a little bit more about risk management and how that's important to options trading. So what are strategies that can help traders limit their potential losses?
Yeah, I mean, risk management has always been the bugaboo. You always, from the early days of my option trading, you really need to understand yourself. It's really a psychological thing in a lot of ways, what type of risk you could handle. I'm not risk averse, but there are a lot of people that are risk averse that they traded in a much different fashion than I trade, and some people even less risk averse than I am. So you have to really understand yourself is the first thing. And then you construct your portfolio so you can make clear-eyed choices when things are going against you. And again, I think one of the biggest things is, we'd always say never be short units. And that really doesn't mean a lot outside of trading. But what that means is if you're short a put, you want to be long a put somewhere else. If you're short a call, you want to be long of maybe even a smaller call somewhere else. Because then there's a limit to the amount that you could lose. And so, that's always been kind of my dividing line between risk, a really risky position and not risky position. So you really have to look at those naked shorts, because those will kill you. I know we haven't seen a lot of that in the market for a while, but it can happen. And when it happens, it's pretty brutal. So you have to really watch that from a risk perspective. And of course, there are freaks to look at, there are slides to look at, there are changing volatilities. Of course, we do all that. But, the big thing is don't be short units and understand your risk tolerances.
And I know you were talking about this a little bit before, but what option strategies work well during periods of heightened volatility?
Yeah, so when this is a non-obvious, non-intuitive answer. But what happens is when volatility gets really high, people, oh, this is the time when you sell something, sell high, buy low. It's actually in the millions of back tests that we looked at, it's not that easy. As a matter of fact, in some situations when the volatility gets high, that's a good time to buy options to profit from more volatility. So the rule of thumb that I have is that the market doesn't get volatility high enough when it's high, and they don't get it low enough when it's low. So even in 2007, implied volatility, you know, got down to 8, but it was only moving at only a 6 vol. So you could have still made money selling vol at a very low time. And when the volatility got really high around the COVID crash, it was still moving around. Like even though the VIX, I don't know, got to 80, it was still moving around in the 90 or 100. So it's not as obvious, and you know, it's never as obvious as you know, buy low and sell high in volatility land. Because again, remember that rule of thumb where they, you know, they just can't get it above a certain level, and they can't get it below a certain level. And sometimes at those tails, it's counterintuitive. And that's what we found in a lot of our backtesting as well.
So I have another risk-related question. What are some non-price-oriented risks that traders have to watch out for when they're looking to establish positions?
Yeah, so non-price says Greeks and it says units. So I just talked about units. So that's one of the first non-price. You don't care what the price is. You want to have flat units. The other is, yeah, you have to really watch your Greeks. And Delta is the obvious one. And Gamma is another one. Vega is another one. But there's also like a slope risk. So that's not usually talked about in a Greek. But, you know, we look at what's called skew or slope, where the puts are often higher than the calls. And that could really affect what if you're putting on positions that are all kind of one way on the slope, and the slope moves, you could lose a lot of money. There was a huge trade that went up when I just started market making in Microsoft that people still talk about, where the skew never came back. Usually, you know, a lot of things in options are mean reverting, which means when they go so far one way, they'll come back. But, you know, some things don't, and where it takes much longer than you could hold on to it. So I would say those are the main non-price related risks. Things to look out for out there.
I wanted to ask you one more question before we get into the concluding questions. What are your insights into the market movements that we might expect in the near future, and how should a retail use options to trade around them?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously it's hard to see the future, but I mean, there's so many risks out there. You know, Wall Street climbs a wall, a wall of worry and falls down the slope of hope. I mean, pay attention to those stupid sayings because they've been around a long time. So I think there's so much worry out there that we're just kind of like floating up on this worry. But at some point, you know, I don't like this market. I haven't been shy about saying that. So you just have to be careful, but you also have to have, you can't be so short that you're going to lose all your money. So you have to like, and options actually help you do that. So, you know, you could have convexity, meaning a lot of options really low, and then have some income producing strategies that don't lose you too much money if it goes against you around the money. And with that type of a strategy, you could kind of stay alive while still having, you know, the position that I, you know, think is going to happen. So that's that, you know, so that's one thing, that kind of grind down and also, but you know, grinding up, and so be able to survive that. And you know, we look at a lot of our option related information in order to get some clues as to what the market's doing. So right now volatility is low and falling. That's usually pretty bullish. So, you know, markets don't generally crash from that type of a situation. So that those are periods where it's a little bit safer. We're starting to see some negative signals come through though. So it's kind of hard to get out there. But those are some of the things that I think about on this market, Asma.
So a few final questions just to wrap up our conversation a little bit here. The first one is, what are some of the most important lessons you've learned while working with derivatives in your career?
Yeah, and boy, anything could happen. The scariest thing, I almost went out of business trading just newly getting into the pit, and you know, we had the stock, and they were just buying everything, and you know, at some point I couldn't sell it anymore because of my risk tolerances. And then of course it got bought out, and you know, I'm like, what happened? You know, like, so anything could happen is the lesson that I, and luckily I survived that. And you know, you really have to watch risk at every point on your, you know, like we talked about before. You know, there are Greeks, there are slope, there's units, you know, you have to watch, like, it's very difficult, but you have to watch all those. And, you know, especially for retail now, like, we didn't used to care so much about exercises because, you know, we had money, we had market maker margin and all that. But now with when you get exercise, you know, that's a big risk for people. So you, because you have to have a lot of money in your account. And, you know, so that happens. So we, you know, at ORATS, we calculate what we think the exercise risk is on a particular option. So that's, you know, so that's a risk. And then, you know, like having too many of your symbols too correlated. You know, we do a lot of backtesting, but over reliance on backtesting is a risk. So there's a lot of small risks out there. And the thing that I've really learned is, you know, you have to watch every one of those risks, and then, you know, the money will come, but watch the risks.
So along with lessons, what advice would you pass along to somebody who's looking to get started in the industry?
Yeah, it's not as easy as maybe you'll see on these YouTubes, right? So you have to do a lot of work, you know, so this better be a passion, because, you know, you're competing out there. And, you know, I used to compete, I used to get beat up a lot out there. And you have to be at the top of your game, again, when you're competing in a sport, and you have to be at the top of your game when you're competing in the trading market out there. So you have to be very prepared to do a lot of research. And that's how I built ORATS, to do that, to really, and the backtesting really gives you a lot. And looking at accurate graphs with a lot of history to them, you know, that, you know, I remember when I was starting to show people on the floor the graphs that we made with all the volatilities and the implieds and out of the monies, in the monies, slopes, calendars, all that, they used to go, wow, because they had it, the successful market makers had to keep that in their mind. But now we have a lot more data out there, but you have to really research that and be able to understand it and understand how to profit. So, you know, for new people coming in, get comfortable with doing a lot of research, find a niche, understand your psychology, watch your risk. And if you have a, you know, if you have a good and well-tested strategy, then, you know, again, watch your risk and the money will follow.
So you might know, but every week we choose a topic for the show. Do you have any recommendations of a topic that maybe we could cover next to learn more about options?
Yeah, I think earnings trading is fascinating, and I think there's some very good traders out there, and you know, and I also think the zero DTE, but you probably talked about that at length already. But the earnings, you know, again, what I see is most people just think it's a coin flip. Even very experienced traders stay away from earnings, and I really think that taking deep dives into earnings and having a lot of information, testing that information, is actually one of the places that there is a lot of opportunity. You know, and again, that's the niche that I think that traders should look for, you know, find their specialties. And I think that that's very interesting.
And I guess along with new topics, do you have any recommendations of maybe who we could bring on next for the show?
Well, you know, there's a guy at NASDAQ, a good friend of mine, Sean Feeney. He could tell you some good war stories, but he could also tell you about market making, and he could also tell you, and he's in NASDAQ, so he could tell you a lot about what's going on there. They just, at the NDX just went to zero DTE, so I think that he'd be a real good guest, and you could say hi to him for me.
Actually, I think we might have had him as a guest on the show. I think the previous host might have interviewed him. But that's all I have for you today. So thank you for coming on and sharing more about ORATS, as well as your insight into the different market movements. And for everybody else watching, I'll see you all in the next episode. If you're hungry for more options content, make sure to subscribe to the JLN YouTube channel and check out our social media accounts. Be sure to check out our website, johnlothiannews.com, MarketsWiki, and the John Lothian newsletter for more content.